not a lot of sales leaders are like, yep, we're going to do that. We're going to learn a new trick. And so they sit in like a little 10%, 5% growth, and they think that's acceptable.
Plug into the minds of the world's cutting-edge innovators, visionaries, and thought leaders who are rewriting the rules of sales and success. It's your time to make an impact. I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Selling with Love podcast. Very excited to bring a legend in the field of sales that is here to talk about some of the most effective and not just historically, but modern ways of doing sales, marketing, prospecting that'll be so effective for 2024 and beyond using all the tools that are available in our arsenal with someone that is doing it live. And I'm so excited to have him on the platform with me. If you're not familiar with Todd Hartley, he is a number one best-selling author of Accelerating Yes, a top sales and marketing book. He's a keynote speaker, a digital and video marketing expert who has worked with the likes of Tony Robbins, have played with platforms such as HubSpot, where, get this, on a 30-day free trial was able to earn $350,000 in new revenue. For those of us looking at excuses on why we can't get started, that's an example of doing it for free. The man has been working with companies such as 23andMe, Justin Timberlake, MD Anderson, Home Depot, even a former US president. Working with Tony Robbins, he has trained and hired over 1,500 salespeople that allowed them to accelerate the success in various business. Man has a history in talk show radio, currently does podcasting, has been advisor to the White House, and he's here to speak with our audience today. I am so excited to have Todd Hartley join me today. Todd, welcome to the show.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited for this. Thank you so much for having me, Jason.
Todd, this is fun. Now, we were just talking before a little bit about how, you know, podcasting and radio have kind of merged, but it's almost like a lot of these traditional medias have now evolved into an internet age media. So, you know, radio kind of became a bit podcast, TV, maybe a little bit more like YouTube. And you've been a huge proponent around video marketing, even ahead of its time. And I'd be curious to know, what got you that insight on the pulse of where this marketing and sales stuff was going, this technology was evolving? Because it seems like you were at the bleeding edge.
Yeah, thank you. It's actually really interesting. I was a bit of a pariah. Like, I saw it early, but I was at iHeartRadio. I was leading digital for seven of their largest nationally syndicated talk shows and was managing those campaigns. And then part of my requirement, like part of my job, was every week report to the head of the network on the digital side and talk about what content is performing the best across 1,200 stations that fed into iHeartRadio. And every week you'd have like that same meeting with the boss where the data isn't changing, but you're always reporting on it. That's what I had. And he would say, well, how's audio doing? And how is our people responding to it? And I'd say, well, they're responding great to it, but they really love video. And he'd say, no, we're audio people. And I go, no, these people love video because video was getting like 10 times the results. And I was at a place called iHeartRadio. So I just put a little, like, this is 2003 to 2007. So I put a little bookmark in my brain. I was like, video is going to be really, really big. And then I started thinking about, like, what is it? Like, YouTube was just born, but nobody really understood it. I was like, what is it about video that is keeping it from being a juggernaut in 2003 to 2007? And eventually I figured out the answer was bandwidth, because we would have to download those files, which meant it was slowing down people's consumption habits, a problem we don't have today. So I knew that soon video was going to be a massive force for business. And I decided to open up a digital marketing, video marketing agency before we even had a name for video marketing. And the rest was, you know, marketing history. And I've really had an incredible path through the last 25 years in marketing to watch this whole thing unfold. Because at the beginning, people weren't even hiring somebody who knew how to do marketing on the internet. There was no budget for it. So it all just kind of developed over my lifetime. And when I got started, okay, check this out. I had 36 million visitors a year on my website, with zero advertising. I was the only person working there. And this was like 2002 to maybe 2008, and 36 million visitors a year. But I didn't know how to monetize it because that part of the internet wasn't born yet. And so I had massive audience, but I was waiting tables at night. Right? It just, that part of the business wasn't born yet. So a lot of people that were OGs, we suffered at the beginning because the revenue models just weren't established yet.
It's kind of fascinating to go back not far. You're talking 20 years. That is a short amount of time, and see where all these constraints that existed back then have rapidly and radically been taken down. You mentioned the bandwidth. Now it's like, oh my God, if I don't get 100 megabits to stream my 4K, which a slight delay in loading on my Netflix will make me lose it. And before, wow, just downloading a song was a 30-minute investment if you were one of the lucky ones. And now payment processing, I remember also even going as far as maybe just 10 years ago, was a pain in the butt. You were having like merchant accounts were the hardest things to get. Now Stripe, you get it set it up in 10 minutes and you're able to collect some payments. So I'd be curious to see what were some of the biggest shifts that you've noticed. Those are the ones I would pick out on the last 20 years as constraints online. What are the things you find that were maybe the most magical to see?
I think the most magical are where companies don't sell. And that's a phenomenon. That's a switch. Because when we were all kids way, way back in the day, we only knew commercials. Yeah, we knew infomercials, but infomercials also sold at some point, and they're long form. Infomercials are like the birthplace of what we're doing today with long form webinars that convert on the end. But I think it's really fascinating when you can just teach. Like altruistically, like I believe in the power of altruistic persuasion. All right, I'm going to persuade, but not to manipulate. I'm going to persuade to advocate, to fight for this person out there that I know that I can help them have that incredible transformation in their life. And that is not selling, that's advocating and being a trusted advisor. I think that concept has been one of the biggest shifts in business. And when people get started in video, because they grew up watching commercials, often their first concept is to sell. And I think the last concept is to sell, because if you're advocating for somebody, if you're like, I'm your trusted advisor, I know you wanna climb that Mount Everest and I'm gonna get you there, I've been there before and I'll get you there faster and safer, that's a whole different ball game than pressuring somebody in sales. And sales has always made it feel icky, but helping is part of my core nature. So I think that's one of those changes that if people can make that switch in their brain and just be altruistic and advocate for people, great things can happen.
I like that that's happening because it's almost more aligned with our natural way of wanting to do business human to human, right? And I'd be curious to hear from your perspective, because obviously there's been infomercials, there's been a lot of icky salespeople, and that must have survived somehow because it used to work, it still works. I'd be curious to know, like, why does it even still have a place as we're seeing the trends of what's more effective is much more human to human and educating, advocating.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. Whenever I'm being sold to, I'm like a dude in a boxing ring with my protection up. My gloves are covering my face, right? Like I've got my armor on and I'm defensive. But when I'm with somebody who has my best interests at heart, somebody that I can tell they're trustworthy, they don't even really need the transaction. There's something different that's going on. Now I'm in a safe place. Like that's the vibe. Really successful salespeople are just making friends. Bad salespeople, and I've heard this, I hear people are like, You know, I don't really have time for new friends in my life. I've heard people say this. I've heard salespeople are like, yeah, I don't need to make friends. I'm closing deals. I'm like, yo, if you were just making friends, you would close so many more deals because first, we know when we're being sold to. And we have that defensive reaction. But when somebody is fighting for us and they're doing it in a loving way, even feel like I'm being sold to and I just flow down the river. That's really my natural vibe. And so go back to your question. Why did the other way, the sales way, live on? Well, probably because there's a lot of other sales gurus out there that are teaching a lot of things. And maybe there's even people that have never sold before that have a sales responsibility. And so they turn around and teach what's working. And here's something fascinating. I was in a long conversation one day with Tony Robbins's longtime head of sales. We were having a conversation very similar to this. And I asked him, like, if you could quantify it, what percentage of the sale is the relationship? And he goes, oh, easy, it's 45%. You're like basically on second base. And then I went back and I started to think about all of the times I bought a car, I bought a new piece of technology and somebody gave me guidance, I hired a outside vendor. Every time, the relationship is what brought me back. So what if we, as people that sell with love, use the relationship, not for manipulation, but to advocate for somebody, doesn't that change everything in the game? And don't you, as the salesperson, feel a whole lot ickier? Like every day, you just get to get up and serve people from your heart and you get to live in the helper's high. Like that's the kind of fun that I think salespeople should be having every day is like, who can I help? And how can I impact their life and bless them and help them achieve their goals?
There's a lot of memes. And since you've worked with so many salespeople and trained them, having that as your ideal state when you're working in sales seems wonderful. And I feel like a large majority of people that are getting in sales, that reality is not reflected. And I feel like you probably come and tell them these concepts and it's like a light bulb moment because it's more like, I'm dreading the work. I'm hesitating to pick up the phone. I'm drained when I finish my day because there seems to be a lot of energy going through when you are a salesperson. I'd love to hear, like, how does it usually look like when you walk into an office and you start offering training and a different way of doing business to salespeople who might just be so tired at this point?
Okay. So look, I have created a sales methodology that increases revenue, like doubles companies' revenue, like this. Doesn't matter what the size is, what industry, who they're selling to, because it's really not about the company or the industry. People have this concept, this flawed concept that they have to sell a certain way inside of an industry, as if everybody that buys in that industry is like a test tube baby that only lives in that industry and doesn't step outside the test tube into other industries. It's like, it's totally, well, we're B2B, Todd, and there's a very specific way that people want to buy. Nah, it's about the psychology of the buyer. It's never been about the industry. That's something that people that have been in the industry too long have lied to themselves about. It's about the buyer. And when the buyer's needs and pain and frustrations are centered in the sales process, all of a sudden things change. But there's a lot of, and please, I mean this with all love and respect. There's a lot of professionals in any type of job that are very comfortable doing it the way that they were trained or always have done it. And they mistake comfort from efficiency. I'll give you an example. When I go in and teach people about how to close twice as many deals, I'm teaching them how to use video. Like when you submit a proposal, what if you put your face on camera and you put your proposal up next to you on the same screen and you coached people through the proposal, because there's people that you haven't met yet that are going to be part of that deal that need to sign off. You know, like there might be three other people and a CFO and a CEO, and you haven't been able to be there to influence them. But if you put yourself on camera and you walked people through a proposal and you put your eyes on the lens and you got your tonality right, the tonality of somebody that's there to serve and advocate and help you accomplish your goals, and real genuine, like a friend-making tonality, all of a sudden you'd close twice as many deals. But what I get a lot of salespeople that are like, yeah, dude, that's great. That's a lot. You know, that seems like a lot of work. But truth is, you only have to touch less people. You don't need to do the turn and burn thing. People mistake comfort from efficiency. That doesn't sound efficient. Can somebody get me more leads? You know, they're just missing it. Let me give you another example. 41% of a salesperson's day is spent writing emails, but 80% of emails never get opened. And when I come in and advise, it doesn't matter if it's a Fortune 500 company, but I'm advising their sales team, the thought of changing from email to creating a video and maybe texting it to their prospect is so foreign that the first pushback that I get is, it doesn't sound efficient. And then when I walk them through the logic, they're like, we just write emails and send them out. I'm like, wait, dude, nobody's reading them. 80% of your proposals don't even get opened. How do we pump up the jam on that and get better results and move away from something we're comfortable in that we've confused as efficient and get into something that's going to create better results, which is if you create a proposal and you email it to somebody and you send the text message, hey, Jason, it was great talking with you earlier today. As promised, I just sent you an email with a proposal and a video. But if you're on the go, here's the link to the video and the email right here. And then they click on it right there from the text message. And now you've got a 5 times higher open rate. What does a 5 times higher ability to engage on your proposal do for your end of month revenue or your end of quarter or the end of year? It's the difference between just barely making it with a lot of people who are comfortable or wild friggin' celebrations. And not a lot of sales leaders are like, yep, we're going to do that. We're going to learn a new trick. And so they sit in like a little 10%, 5% growth, and they think that's acceptable. That's why I giggled, because I'm a little different. Like when I go in, I want to help them get to that point where their company can experience the full breakthrough and potential, but it requires us to use slightly different technology, even though it's more effective and it closes at a higher rate. It's just the learning part that gets people a little scared.
Todd, as you share this, I can only think of myself, say 10 years ago, being someone that's advocating for innovative sales and marketing tools. And back then, yeah, you had to kind of tech around. You had to figure things out. You had to plug things together. And I was pretty geeky at that time. I was pretty good at figuring things out. Like I would go into the settings and I would go play with these tech. There was a couple new marketing tech platforms and I'd always be trying to push them forward. And then I'd look at the older people, less tech savvy people. And I'd be like, guys, it's so easy. You just need to click 20 times around here. And look, you can send an email with a video attached and it's great. And then a lot of resistance came because, let's face it, it wasn't that easy to use, but you know, it brought a massive upside, but you had to put a big amount of time, or at least a much larger amount of time on the technology side than when you compare to today, which seems to me like a golden age of ease, availability for everyone and anyone. Are you seeing the same?
Oh, dude, am I seeing the same? I'm like, you just painted the perfect picture. I created this AI-driven video sales tool called Clarity.video that allows people to create their videos and use them in their sales process and move people through the decision-making, you know, with the greatest of ease. And so, yes, and I live in that world because when I used to teach the clunky tools, I used to get people that were like, in theory, this is a great idea. And they couldn't handle the clunky tools. But, you know, I think about that stat that you gave about HubSpot in the introduction that during my 30-day free trial, we sold $350,000. This is 2015, where I'm known inside HubSpot's offices from their founders as the first person to use video inside HubSpot. They call me, they have a stupid name for me, but I'll take it. They're not marketers. They call me the original schmarketer, which is a combination of smart sales marketer. And I think salespeople that, well, first, sales in large organizations, salespeople absolutely hate the assets that marketing creates. They're just not connected to anything that the salespeople are really leveraging on a daily basis. So the best salespeople are like whipping up their assets on a daily basis to be better in line with where that prospect's needs and pain and frustrations are. But I really think that if you can use an asset and become a little bit of a marketer inside of your sales process and teach visually and remove the reading heavy text part, people will buy from you at faster rates. People are four times more likely to watch video than to read. When you transfer knowledge, you can transfer 95% of the message into your prospect's head when you use video, but only 10% with reading. So reading is a really bad tool for a salesperson that's trying to crush their quota. And then after they watch your video, they're 85% more likely to buy. So how do we just make it easy for people? And the easier we make it with the least amount of mental calories that they have to burn to realize that they know, love, and trust our information, the more sales we get, the more celebrations, the more growth, the less zits you get on your face. Like, I've gone through it all. And life gets a whole lot better when we learn new tricks and start closing more deals.
I'm always curious when I hear about how sales and marketing works together in super large organization, because I don't have that experience. I've only seen what the memes are about or what the stories about marketing being so isolated here and sales being so isolated there.
I'm the dude. You want to do that topic?
It's almost for my own personal curiosity to see what is the reality there. And I feel like we could tie this on to the advantage that the entrepreneur has compared to that big silo.
Yeah. So everybody's got this thought in their head. It's a bias that the large corporations have significant advantages. But the truth is, the bigger the company, the larger the silo between marketing and sales. I mean, the companies that I've gone in and trained are the biggest companies in the world. And first thing I'm normally told by either the head of sales or the head of marketing, because I get approached, I come in through either door, or the CEO. But the first thing I normally hear is about how they don't like each other. The marketing team doesn't talk to the sales team. We haven't talked to them in, you know, 6 months. And people are rowing in the wrong direction. And it's bizarre. One of my first jobs when I get into a very large company is my job is to mend that fence, actually to break down the silo and to get them rowing in the same direction. One of these companies, a $2 billion company in the medical space, I won't mention their name, not any of the companies mentioned in the introduction. And the first thing, national sales director came out to my office. I trained her in my video selling strategies. And that's partially marketing. What did she say to me? I don't think our marketing team knows any of this. Then she went back to headquarters. She called me and she's like, they don't know any of this. I need to send them out. So then the marketing team came out to Scottsdale and I did a 3-day workshop, teaching, training. Then they got the concept and sales got the concept. And then when we deployed it across 200 salespeople, all rowing in the same direction, at the end of the year, they had their highest revenue in 14 years. And their CEO dropped me a note saying, this was the fastest turnaround I have ever seen in 35 years in business. And that national sales director who broke the silo with me, within a year, she went from national sales director to the president of the $2 billion company. And the marketing people didn't love me. And that's okay. But the stockholders and board of directors really did. So you just got it done, you know?
Yeah. And you know, what I find so fascinating is like, I feel like we're supposed to all be doing the same thing, especially on these large organizations, like the goal's the same, but there seems to be this resistance. And I don't know, do you find a common thread of what is the language mismatch that makes it so that sales and marketing are at an opposition?
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, I go to a lot of the companies' events and their conferences. I'm there to study and not to study the marketing team or really the salespeople. I'm there to study the only thing that really matters, their prospects. And what I've discovered is marketing creates all the assets. Marketing's only time being client-facing is at like a conference once a year or twice a year. They take that knowledge and create the assets. Sales is in front of prospects every day, but they don't bring that knowledge over to the marketing team. And the marketing team, when they do provide that knowledge, doesn't receive it.
Mm.
The larger the organization, the bigger the disconnect. And that's sad to see.
It's super sad. And I don't know if it's because of some sort of personal dilemmas that cause it so that like, hey, I don't want to speak to the prospects or I don't want to speak to the clients. It seems like the most fundamental thing to be more aligned on what to create from a marketing perspective, which kind of brings me to this advantage that entrepreneurs and small business owners must have when you are the one talking to the client, you are the one doing the marketing, you are the one doing the sales. That must put you at such a better advantage than a big corporate that has so many layers, translations, and a game of telephone about who these people actually are.
Yeah, but you know, people are predisposed to think that they're at a disadvantage, but smaller businesses where the business leader gets repetition in front of prospects and then the business leader's also working on the marketing is a slingshot advantage. Right? The knowledge really doesn't have to be transferred over. All they have to be thinking about is who are the different types of prospects that we serve? The different types of buyers. And then for each of those types of buyers, what are their needs, pain, and frustrations? And then each of those get their own unique journey. Because let me give you an example. We did this for, are you familiar with Cool Sculpting?
I am not actually. Wait, isn't that the fat burning?
Yeah. So I talk about this in my book and when we started working with them at my digital marketing agency, Wirebuzz, they had a one-size-fits-all landing page. You want to freeze off fat, come in, schedule an appointment. We're happy to meet with you. This is painless, no incisions. Go home that same day, okay? And the fat dissolves off. But what they discovered is they weren't converting at a high enough level because, remember, the most important thing, they weren't treating these different types of buyers as unique. So once we started, we were like, wait a minute. So who are the different types of patients? One of them, somebody with a double chin, wants to get rid of a double chin. Triple chins are fine too. They can get rid of the triple. They probably do it at the same price. I don't know. And I'm just being sarcastic, okay?
I heard
and
that.
Then there's double chin, there's excess belly fat, and there's somebody else that has side flank fat. These are three different types of people. So if you bring them all to a one size fits all landing page, it doesn't convert. But if you send people that see an ad or have an interest in getting rid of that double chin, and you send them to a page that's just about double chins, and the before and after photos are double chins, and the information, it converts at a freakish rate. Then belly fat, different page. And a third page, side flank fat. Now all of a sudden, the videos and the images and the before and afters and the frequently asked questions are related to that. So the most important thing is always understand your prospect and find out what their needs are, and then make it feel personalized and relevant. Any salesperson can do that. You don't need a web developer. You don't need a committee. Salespeople do it every day. And Jason, you get it. A salesperson always, this is what marketing doesn't know that sales has mastered, that salespeople have already optimized the path to the magic word of yes by walking through the path for that specific type of buyer. When marketing learns that, all of a sudden, marketing can scale up sales.
I have the thing that I would do, and this was back in my time at Mindvalley. Like, I would be on the marketing team, product launch team, but I would get on calls with past buyers to understand who they are. There was this thing I would always love to do, which is going very, very specific, individual, to kind of get a feel of who these people were on the other side. And my question to you, that I didn't know exactly where to draw this line, because there's a part that does that, that is extremely unscalable. And I find these anecdotal types of stories that could influence the way that I direct the marketing based on who I spoke to, versus a lot of my marketing team, they'd be like, you're wasting time. When we get a survey, we get so much more data that's much more closer to an average, not an individual, which makes it so we can adjust our marketing better. Do you have a gauge between those two? Because I feel like one could lead you astray versus the other.
If you get too niche, then you probably have invested too much time into something that isn't going to get a return on investment. And my friend Tony Jerry has a saying, he's not interested in ROI. Everybody loves ROI. He's interested in ROE. Return on effort. And I really like return on effort. Like, if you can think about, you know, what is the effort it's going to take to get super niche, and will it generate ROE? And if it doesn't, then go a little bit wider, less niche-y, right? Like, I'm a believer that the riches are in the niches. I even tell people, write this down, the riches are in the niches, my bitches. Like, it's one of my sayings, right? But if you get too niche-y, you just end up bitching all the time because it isn't working.
Yeah. Well, I know for me, it's one of the things that I'm always trying to figure out, like, how far down that rabbit hole should I go? And if that information that I gathered from that individual is actually a proper representation of the market in itself.
And that's why quantity, you have to do, when you do your evaluation, you've got to get into quantity, because you'll start to see the recurring trend.
Yeah. But that's one thing that I am going to be on the sales side and I'll advocate for, is I feel like when I have that chat with someone, I get to have a pulse on something that no survey data point can tell me. There's like a soul or an heart element, and there's an individual story that I often extract as a case study to use in my email, to use in my assets, that I can't just say, like, studies have shown that 43% of people that make this buying decision will see some kind of improvement in their life, versus saying Jerry was able to keep a job for 2 months more than any other type, that before he couldn't even hold a job for a week. And you can see like a visceral type of connection, which I find is often the missing link for people that might be more stuck on the marketing side.
Yes. I use stories. You know how Batman, like, Batman's not really a superhero. I hate to break it to anybody, but Batman just has like super tools, right? So he's got a tool belt that's like, you don't get this stuff at Home Depot. Like, this is legit superhero belt. And inside of my tool belt, I've got different stories that I can pull out at a moment's notice based on relevancy. Like, I would never encourage a salesperson to tell a story for the sake of telling a story. It has to be to either reaffirm something that somebody was concerned about, or to have an epiphany breakthrough and to move them onto the right path, right? So there are three psychological needs that every prospect is struggling with. The first is they're struggling with a need for clarity. They need clarity on what their problem is. This is why the larger the organization that I go to, they've already got it structured where the sales person's first job is to get clarity on the problem. Once they get clarity on the problem, Jason, they kind of have to pin that person down. Like, I mean, if you could solve that problem, this is the problem you need to solve, isn't it? And you're like, yeah, and that's really what I'm struggling with. Great. If we could solve that problem, would it be valuable to you? Like, you got to have that, right? And then you got to write that problem down. Okay, let me write this down just so I make sure, like, we're going to solve that problem. Pin their ass down in a nice way. Then the second part of clarity that they need, which is the first psychological need, is they need clarity on your solution, right? Once you've accomplished that, you can then move into the second psychological need. The second psychological need that everybody has, regardless of industry, doesn't matter if it's B2B or B2C, the second psychological need is they need to know your credibility. Because we don't hire people if it's their first rodeo. This is why the number one pushback that salespeople get is, yeah, that's great and all, Jason, but you ever done anything like this for somebody like me? Like, you ever had that before? Like, you've had it 1,000 times, right? And people listening, 1,000 times. This is a call for your credibility. They're actually living in uncertainty if you can do it or not for somebody like them. And the third psychological need is the need to collaborate. Most people think they're selling to their champion. And this is where they lose a lot of their money because they rely on their champion to be their spokesperson inside the organization or inside the home. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if it's B2B or B2C. Unless you're making like a purchase on like an iPhone or shoes. But almost every purchase a salesperson's doing, there's another person that they're not going to get to meet that's going to be a part of the deal. If you can take your internal champion and give them an asset, which is really a video, and give them a little video. Hey, Jason, it was great talking with you earlier. And I know you're going to be talking with whoever, because the salesperson extracts that. Could be a spouse, could be a business partner, could be a business advisor, could be a department head if you've got a longer sales process, could be a CFO. And I want to walk you all through the strategy that Jason and I worked on together. Now, all of a sudden, Jason's like, cool, you just made my life easier. And what does Jason do? He's 3 times more likely to share that video from a salesperson than the email. And you know the stats. I already gave it to you. People are 85% more likely to buy. So you've got to stop relying on the game of telephone where your salesperson goes down and poorly explains the 3 psychological needs. Right? The salesperson needs to be the one that explains clarity on what the problem and the solution is, share your credibility, and then help them collaborate. When you do that, it's a freaking game changer. And you never have to sell. You never have to be icky. You just have to advocate from your heart, through the lens, directly to the people. And so that means, like, let's say Jason's my internal champion. But I know that Regina and Wendy are the real decision makers. I would say, as I'm talking in the video, I go, and by the way, Wendy and Regina, I look forward to meeting you. And if you have any questions as you've been going through this, or you guys start to meet on this, just click on my calendar link and schedule a meeting or call my cell. I'm happy to jump on a call and walk you guys through it. I know it's a lot of information. Like, just like you would if somebody was a friend. Right? And I don't know about you, but everybody that I sell to, they become like my new BFFs, especially when they start having like radical breakthrough and transformation. That national sales director who went on to become the president of the $2 billion company is like one of my closest friends in the world today. We vacation our families together, right? When we go out and sell with love and serve people and they have their breakthroughs, like, those become your case studies and your stories that end up on your Batman belt that you can take out at a moment's notice. And where do those stories belong? They belong in not clarity, the first psychological need, but the second psychological need, which is the need for your credibility. The real trick is pairing up the right story with the right prospect. So they're hyper-related. The more related, the more sticky it'll be. It's pretty easy, isn't it?
It's not rocket science, but it is human psychology.
It's not rocket science.
Todd, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show and sharing all these insights. I want to remind everyone to grab a copy of Accelerating Yes. You'll see a link to the book is going to be put into the show notes. And Todd, although you kind of went and answered this question, I need to ask it directly because I do ask every one of my guests this question, which is, since you're on the Selling with Love podcast, what does selling with love mean to you?
Well, I'm just a friend maker. This is what it means to me. I mean, I'm a friend maker. I walk down the street. My wife calls me the mayor. I wave at every car, you know, when I'm out on my run in the morning. And what I love about it is great salespeople walk around and make friends. And frustrated salespeople keep their head down throughout the day. But the great salesperson creates opportunities. They talk to people. They find out what they're struggling with. So selling with love for me is just an extension of how I serve and who I would be on a daily basis. And it's not disconnected from my personality. I always want people in a better place, having breakthroughs and transformations. And I think we all know that when you hire somebody and they get you to the next level in your life, this is like a whole rush of energy that happens, of possibilities and breakthrough. And I want to be that kind of person that helps people remember how much fun their journey is and how everything is possible with just the right strategies and the right guide to help you get there. And I want to be one of those people. And if I could, I created clarity.video. Clarity, yes, my book is going to be great. It's the number one bestseller. We want to give it to you all for free. And you can also download the audiobook that comes at the same time. It's just a gift for all of you in the audience. And the audiobook's like 10 hours of this. But I also want to give you guys access to my video selling tool called clarity.video. And if you type in clarity.video/TH, my initials, Todd Hartley, clarity.video/TH, you'll get a 60-day free trial. I highly recommend doing it. There's like a landing page builder, like ClickFunnels, and a video tool so you can then own the path all the way to yes and get people on those pages to sign the agreement or to book a meeting or to buy right there. And I highly recommend you guys use it. It's a game changer.
Nice. Well, I actually wrote that down. You mentioned ClickFunnels. This is one of the technology pieces one of my clients uses. So I'm going to go poke at this. I'm going to look at it. One of the biggest initiatives I'm bringing into one of the organizations right now is now that the marketing has all been stabilized, it's about bringing a lot more touch point, a lot more salespeople to help with some of the higher price point conversions. So I think this is exactly the tool we were looking for. So coincidence? I think not. But I will say, Todd, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Biggest takeaways that I've taken from our conversation, for one, is just understanding that, hey, if you're out there with the best of intention, and like I like how you call it, just out there making friends, I think it takes away a lot of the negativity and pressure that a lot of salespeople would put on themselves with the title of sales. Removing the ickiness and realizing that when you genuinely care for people and trying to help them out as a friend, you're automatically going to see some massive results come through. I love also how we talked about how embracing the new technologies, with video being everything leading towards video. And today is an age where the technology is easier than ever to include a short video, whether that's using the tool clarity.video. One of the key things that came to my mind is like, how hard is it to record a Loom video and attach that now? It's like a lot of stuff that you can do with video, sharing your screen, bring that within your proposal, just increases the conversion rate in a massive way. And it's not even hard to do. We just need to get outside our comfort zone and try something new. We talked about the silos and disadvantages of large business marketing being a little more distanced from the prospects, which might make them a little more disconnected. And if we can bring that together, well, as small business owners, we do have that advantage because we're the business owner, we're the marketer, we're the salesperson. So we're more in touch with the people than any other big company. So we come with an advantage. And with that, Todd, it was an absolute pleasure. A lot of things I can take away. Thank you so much for coming on the platform. Again, there's going to be a link in the show notes for clarity.video/TH for anybody interested. We're also going to have a link to the book Accelerating Yes, and it was an absolute pleasure having Todd. For everybody out there, keep selling with love. I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.